The Big Sports Breakfast Summer Edition, updating some scores from overnight. The Adelaide Strikers defeated the Sydney Sixers by 8 wickets at Adelaide Oval in the Big Bash. Perth Scorchers, they're absolutely flying on top of the ladder, downing the Brisbane Heat by 6 wickets. Hideki Matsuyama, the Masters champion, he won the Sony Open in Hawaii. He won with an eagle on the first extra hole to defeat American Russell Henley. Was a terrific last shot, if you get to look at that one online. He was blinded by the sun and got it to within about a metre for almost a tap-in eagle. So a terrific effort by him yesterday as well. And, of course, some terrific efforts by the Aussies, led by Ash Barty in a straight sets victory last night. John Millman and Alexander Vukic also having victories, but unfortunately losses to Tanasi Kokkinakis, James Duckworth and Ila Tomjanovic in the first round. We have 12 Aussies in action today.
And also, Ryan, in the NBA today, there's been 2 games. The Charlotte Hornets beat the Knicks by 10 points and the Celtics 104-92 over the Pelicans.
And in the NFL yesterday, by the time we went off air, we didn't have the results to give to you for San Francisco, who downed Dallas 23-17. Kansas City, after midday, they defeated Pittsburgh 42-21. Today, Arizona take on Los Angeles, and that will round off the playoffs to see how we play out next weekend. This hour, we're going to be talking to Dan Smith, Sydney Thunder coach, and DJ Velasevic from the Sydney Kings about all things BBL and also NBL. It was interesting to see a lot of the news reporting of Novak Djokovic flying out of Australia and landing in Dubai. There was still a big media scrum and a lot of fans there to welcome Novak Djokovic, and he seemed to be accommodating with a lot of those fans. But news that he could be in a bit of bother for the French Open as well.
But you're right, he actually did handle that really nicely with a bunch of fans all coming up to get selfies with him, because no doubt he's shattered inside. But yes, it looks like he might have a bit of trouble entering the French Open. Just they've passed a new vaccine law, which now removes any recent COVID infection as a medical exemption to be able to enter into sporting facilities. Although, as we mentioned before, the French Open does take place a month after the French presidential election. So who knows what the rules will be by then. And the same story with the US. You need to be vaxxed to enter as a foreign traveller into the country alone, and very few exemptions are given. The only Grand Slam that looks like a certain starter for him at this stage is Wimbledon. To enter the UK, it's just 10 days quarantine.
I reckon he'll play the French. I reckon he'll play. There'll be some sort of exemption or some sort of bubble set up for unvaccinated players. I think he'll be able to play at Roland Garros.
Well, it seems like this law that they're bringing in, I don't think will allow that. Well, I know that the tournament organisers said they wanted to.
Yeah, the sports minister came out last night and said that he thinks Novak will be able to play. They'll have some sort of bubble for players like him who'll be able to play at Roland Garros. I know the general law of the population of the country is to not allow unvaccinated players to come in, but listen, there's 4 months to go now. Surely there's enough time to work it out.
And a change in power as well.
And I do hope they all get on the same page, because if they learn anything from Australia, it's talk to one another. Be aligned with the process that you're going to put in place, because it was just embarrassing for Australia. Okay, look, we now can all say that even though the initial judge's ruling was that Novak, you know, did everything possible, I think we're now in agreement that, you know, by the law, Novak Djokovic had to be booted out of the country. But it still doesn't mask the fact from tournament organisers and Craig Tiley to the Victorian government to Australian Border Force, it was an absolute embarrassment and a debacle.
But I also am waiting to hear from even Tennis Australia's board or Craig Tiley.
I think they have been so silent.
Yeah. Someone needs to come out and speak about what happened on their behalf, because the silence is deafening that's coming out of Tennis Australia.
They won't say anything now while the tournament started. They've got 2 weeks to go now to try and run a tournament as best as they possibly can. I firmly believe they should address the issue, Jamie, and come out and get it over and done with. But just reading the cards, I don't think they'll be saying anything until this tournament's finished now.
Well, let's talk cricket. And the Sydney Thunder, they were looking like the form team of the BBL until a recent slip-up in the Sydney Smash against the Sixers. The Thunder had won six on the trot, but they've dropped their past two games now to slip to third spot on the ladder. So it means the Thunder need to beat the Renegades tomorrow and hope the Sixers lose their final match against Brisbane if they want to make the qualifier, which is essentially a one-way ticket into the BBL final for the winner. Former New South Wales keeper Dan Smith, he knows all about BBL finals as a player and will be part of this series as the Thunder's assistant coach, and he joins us this morning. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning, everyone. How are you going?
Very, very well. Great to be talking to you this morning. Obviously, that one would always sting for the Thunder against the Sixers. What did you learn from that loss?
Oh, yeah, look, in terms of learnings, we take a lot of learnings out of every single game, whether we win or lose. But I heard you mention about our last two slip-ups. Probably good timing. Certainly rather it now than at the business end of the season. And over a 14-game regular season, you're not going to get every single game right. So these things happen, but we'll learn from it. We'll move on.
And moving on, you will be playing the Renegades, last place Renegades, tomorrow. How's that looking?
Well, again, last place Renegades, they're a dangerous outfit. They've got strength across with the bat and ball. Last time we played them, we got the cash over them. So, again, we'll learn from what we got right and the little things we can improve there and hopefully build some momentum into the final series.
Morning, Daniel. I just want to chat to you a bit about a couple of the up-and-coming players, I suppose. Jason Sanger's had a breakout tournament so far this year. 10 Vs, obviously, continued his progression. Daniel Sam's having another great tournament. And Matthew Jukes has been great at the top of the order. What are the guys made of those young emerging prospects coming through the Thunder system?
Yeah, look, that's been certainly one of the pleasing aspects of this tournament for us. Our young guys have shown what they're capable of. Jason Sanger's been exceptional in terms of consistency and performance. And the other guys have shown what they're capable of. The exciting thing for them is they go into this final series with a hell of a lot of confidence under their belt. I'm sure we'll see some youngsters light it up in the final series.
Dan, as a player, obviously you spend a lot of time in the BBL. Now, as a coach, how difficult has it been to manage this COVID period? And obviously, we're seeing it in the results, aren't we? That, you know, the top four teams, Perth, Sydney Sixers, Sydney Thunder, Adelaide Strikers, they seem to be just a level above a lot of the other competition that have probably have some COVID issues. Look, I know everyone's been through it, but how difficult has it been to manage and how has that affected the results, do you think?
Look, it's certainly been a challenge. There's no hiding from that. Any time you sort of got to put life on hold to get through a tournament and, obey all the strict biosecurity rules of, you know, picking up food and not being able to go out for dinner and all those sort of things that have its challenges. Our guys have been exceptional at it. They've really embraced it, realised that it's a short-term sacrifice to try and keep your squad fit and healthy. Some teams have been hit harder than others, and I guess at the end of the day, all the teams in the competition have sort of embraced it and just got on with it for the good of the game and make sure that whatever field is, whatever team's put on the field has been at least an entertaining game of cricket. And I mean, we've seen some brilliant things from some players that probably wouldn't have got opportunities, and hopefully that, you know, opportunity they got through this period has shown what they're capable of and shown the depth of Australian cricket.
Dan, Usman Khawaja obviously plays for the Thunder. What were your thoughts about his performance with the bat during the Ashes, but how important is it to get him back into your side as we head to the end of the season?
Yeah, look, Uzi's a class player, there's no doubt about that. His performance in that Sydney test was showed what he's capable of, and to be honest, I wasn't really surprised. I think had he played the whole five tests, he probably would have churned out a truckload of runs. In terms of us, look, he's had a busy schedule. We'd be keen as mustard to get him back. I know he's keen to come back, and he'd be a fantastic in for us heading into the business end of the tournament.
Daniel, we seem to have this never-ending debate about the length of this BBL season, the right format for the finals, how many games is the right amount. We don't often hear from coaches and players what their thoughts are. What do you guys think about it? Is a 14-game regular season and a final series too much, or would you like it to be a little bit shorter?
It's a tough one for me because I haven't been involved for 8 years. I can't even remember how many games it was when I was playing, and it felt like a long tournament then. But again, it's tough to judge it on crowd numbers because, you know, teams aren't necessarily playing home games. I have no doubt a lot of people aren't sort of going through the gates because they have that fear of COVID. So it's tough to say whether it's too long, too short, not enough, too much. But from a playing point of view, the boys are getting constant cricket. They're getting great opportunity to show what they're capable of on the big stage. And again, some brilliant learnings from it. So as far as I'm concerned, there's never too much cricket.
Yeah. Hey, Dan, coaching. Obviously, you've made the transition as an assistant coach with Trevor Bayliss, who incidentally is being mooted as potentially a next Australian coach. Even Andrew McDonald, who you know quite well, is in the Australian system, and he's been suggested as well. And he said he didn't want to potentially... Well, there's rumours that he doesn't want to take the top job. Well, just give us some insight into coaching, the challenges that you think you face, and why would that be such a big job to take on the Australian cricket role?
Well, I think you look at how often the players are away from home, away from their families, and you know, especially given the times we have now with biosecurity bubbles, it is certainly a challenge. You know, you're probably away for up to 330 days a year. You know, you got to try and keep the players up and about, even though that they're putting their life on hold with bubbles. We've seen England struggles with it. It'd be a huge job. I have no doubt if Trevor did step into that role, he'd do a fantastic job. But, it has its challenges on and off the field, probably more so now than ever with COVID. And, you probably have to embrace a hell of a lot more.
Mm. Just one player I want to touch on, Dan, was Sam Billings. We saw he had a great impact for the Thunder at the start of the BBL season, then obviously had that long car trip and the last-minute call-up to the England Ashes test squad. What do you make of his contribution to the Thunder throughout this season?
Oh, he's a fantastic person, a fantastic cricketer. He brings a wealth of experience. The thing I love about him is his presence on the cricket field. He's shown that in the test match. Even though it was his debut, he had a brilliant presence with limited... I guess, well, red ball or pink ball preparation. He's shown what he's capable of, even in that short stint out there where he got 30 in the first innings. I think if he was given an extended run, he could do a tremendous thing for England, and they could do a lot worse with him behind the stumps.
Yeah, and you should know as a former keeper yourself, and there was also a little bit of criticism around Alex Carey. What did you make of his performance? Not so much with the bat, but with the gloves. I know he put a couple down, but he also took a couple of screamers as well. How do you think he's done in taking over from Tim Payne?
I think he did a fantastic job. I think we forget that Kez hasn't played a lot of back-to-back red ball cricket, given his time in the white ball team with Australia. We tend to forget how physically challenging it is behind the pegs for back-to-back tests. He was certainly fatigued by the end of it, but he's shown what he's capable of. He'll be a fantastic clubman for a long period of time for Australia. The more cricket he gets under his belt back-to-back, you know, the better his body's going to hold up, the better he's going to move, and he'll show that he'll grasp those catches a hell of a lot more often than he misses them.
Well, it's a great endorsement from someone who certainly knows how to perform behind the stumps yourself, Dan. And good luck with the Sydney Thunder. Hopefully the team can get things right at the right end of the season, which is coming up at the end of the week. So best of luck.
Brilliant. Thanks very much, guys.
Daniel Smith, Sydney Thunder assistant coach, joining us this morning. Well, the Sydney Kings blew a 10-point lead with 5 minutes to go on Sunday against the New Zealand Breakers in the NBL. Their coach, Chase Buford, was scathing in his labelling of the performance. He called it embarrassing. They've now slipped to a 3-5 record. In fairness, what's been a very COVID-disrupted season so far. DJ Vasiljevic, he's only had a handful of games coming back from an Achilles injury. In fact, his first season in Sydney, he appeared on track for Rookie of the Year honours, but obviously that injury played a major part in affecting that, and he's back on track and he joins us this morning. Good morning, DJ.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, pleasure to have you. And how are you coming back from that injury? It must have been frustrating. Do you feel like you're at full speed and where you want to be?
Yeah, I think I showed last game that I'm kind of getting back to myself and, you know, being the DJ I was before the injury, but the first few games I was a bit rusty. You know, a lot of people could tell, but it's good to be back playing again.
DJ, talk us through, I don't know if you'd call it a heartbreaking loss or a frustrating loss to the Breakers on Sunday, where you led the entire time and then went down in the final quarter.
Yeah, I think you guys summed it up. It was embarrassing, like Jace Buford said. You know, basketball's not a 35-minute game, and if it was, you know, we'd win most games, but we're going to be able to put all 40 minutes together, and we couldn't do that against New Zealand.
DJ, is that just a mindset thing more than a physical thing?
I think it's just executing down the stretch and, you know, paying attention to the scout on the defensive end, but also just keep doing what we were doing the whole game on offense for the last 5 minutes of the game.
I know you won't want to make excuses because every team is going through COVID, but it certainly has been a disruption. But not just with yourself coming back from injury, but then you've got RJ Hunter as well. Unfortunately, he's gone down again. It has been hard to get the consistent starting five, you know, out there on the court, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has. And obviously, we've been hit by an injury bug. You know, obviously, losing Jordy Hunter for the year, and now we've lost RJ Hunter for the year. So, again, it's not an excuse, but, you know, it's just a lot of injuries has made it inconsistent for us, but we can't use it as an excuse because we have to have that next man mentality up.
So you guys have now lost three straight and you're coming up against the Brisbane Bullets on Friday and they're coming in off a good win over South East Melbourne Phoenix. How do you guys pick yourselves up and bounce back on Friday night?
Oh, we just got to go in there and kind of take their home court advantage away. Obviously, we're playing in Brisbane and then playing in Sydney against them again. So it's like a mini series. So we just got to lock into whatever the coaches tell us and play the whole 40 minutes, not just 35.
DJ, we're seeing COVID affect many of the Australian summer sports, including the A-League, the Big Bash, the NBL as well. A lot of games have been postponed and rescheduled. Just give us a bit of insight from a professional athlete's point of view. How has it been trying to deal with these COVID outbreaks and any biosecurity bubbles that the leagues might be asking you to enter?
Oh, you got to be able to adapt. Like, they give you an hour notice, 5 minutes, you just got to be able to adapt because, again, we're getting paid. We got to listen to what the league's saying, but they care more about our health and safety than anything, and that's the most important thing. So, you know, us players have had to adapt to, you know, whatever comes at us.
Is that probably the reason, though, DJ, that you're not playing in the NBA right now? Because I know you were terrific in the college system over there with the University of Miami. I understand that you had terrific interest with a lot of the NBA teams. Is that obviously something you still want to do? And how did that all play out as a result of COVID?
Yeah, obviously I have big ambitions to play in the NBA, and I think COVID kind of affected that a little bit. You know, as you said, I did have a pretty good career in Miami, and, you know, I was going to work out for a few teams because there was a lot of interest. And obviously COVID kind of messed everything up and, you know, forced things to go other way. But, you know, I'm glad to be in the NBL playing for the Sydney Kings and kind of want to make it from here. So I'm just going to continue to work hard and help my team win.
Well, all eyes in the NBA world do look at our NBL league. What are you making about Josh Giddey's performance over there?
Oh, there's no surprise, you know, what he did here, and it's an easy transition for him. Obviously, he's averaging pretty good numbers, and, you know, I'm proud of him. We both played at the same junior club, and, you know, we have a lot of kind of history together, and we still chat here and there. So it's very cool to see all Aussies doing proud. You know, Jock Landale's in the NBA now, so as well. So he's doing really well.
DJ, I've got to ask you about the celebrations when the Boomers won that elusive bronze medal at the Tokyo Olympics. I read a great story saying that you're back over in the United States completing your rehab on your Achilles injury and you're watching the match in the early hours of the morning, was it, over there in the States? And the celebrations weren't exactly welcomed by the neighbours, I can put it that way.
Yeah, once we won, it was just unreal. Like, I think I got, you know, noise complaints back-to-back night. But again, that's just the passion. Like, you know, I've represented the green and gold in junior tournaments, and it's just unreal. Like, to go out there and play with a great, you know, bunch of guys and do great things and to see what the Boomers did and create history is just unreal. Like, you've seen Andrew Gaze tear up on national television, and, you know, I was just doing the same, kind of just yelling and screaming. So that's the way I celebrate it.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, you have played under 17s and under 19s for Australia. Obviously, you harbour ambitions to get back with the Boomers. From an outsider looking in, it just looks as though Paddy Mills is one of the most inspirational leaders you can play for. And then you've got Joe Ingles, who's just an absolute bulldog. We saw him on court during the week. He's not a man to be messed with. But it just seems like a side that is being led and played with the right spirit.
Yeah, 100%, and it all comes to building a culture, and you know, all the players that played before them, you know, set that culture, and now they've just taken it to another level and they've set the standard of, you know, now winning a gold medal. So we got to, you know, whoever comes in for the next generation, we got to continue that legacy and that culture that they've kind of created and kept going.
Well, hopefully that next generation will be you, DJ, and you will get that gold medal. And I'm sure as Australians, it'll be one of the greatest moments should it happen. So best of luck, obviously, with the Sydney Kings in the NBL, and hopefully bigger and better things ahead. Thanks for joining us this morning.
No, I appreciate it. Thank you for having me on.
DJ Vasiljevic joining us this morning, Sydney Kings guard, and hopefully they can get back on track. We know that if he's fully fit, DJ, he's certainly going to be the man to turn things around for the Sydney Kings. It's the Big Sports Breakfast. We want you to be part of the show. Give us a call on the open line number 135353. Ash Barty has got her Australian Open campaign off to a great start, a straight sets victory. In fact, she only dropped one game against Lisa Cerenko. Other Aussies that got a result on day one, wildcard Alexander Vukic defeated Lloyd Harris in four sets. John Millman defeated Feliciano Lopez in four sets. Unfortunately, Tanasi Kokkinakis, James Duckworth and Ila Tomljanovic all lost. There's 12 Aussies in action today. Darius Saville, Sam Stosur, Chris O'Connell, Madison Inglis, Jordan Thompson, Priscilla Hahn, Astra Sharma, Alex Popperin, Alex Bolt, Storm Sanders, Alex De Minaur, and later tonight, Nick Kyrgios. So those feature matches, which will be all after a seven, Storm Sanders, Alex De Minaur, and Nick Kyrgios, who is back after COVID, being grounded by COVID last week and pulling out of the Sydney International. Be interesting to see how he performs. So there's some live scores around this morning as well.
Yeah, just quickly, Ryan, Celtic have won their Scottish Premiership match against Hibernian this morning, winning 2-0. So another win for Ange Postecoglou's team. They're only 3 points behind Rangers in the race for the Scottish title. And Tom Rogic assisted their opening goal. So I know Ange has got some silverware under his belt already with the Scottish Cup. If he can get a premiership over there beating Rangers, geez, it'd be massive, wouldn't it?
Yeah, sure would.
And in the NBA, rather, the Celtics have won 104-92 over the Pelicans. The Hornets won by 10 points over the Knicks. The 76ers lost to the Wizards. There's three games still in play. The Nets are behind the Cavaliers. Now, they're without Kevin Durant, who has that left knee sprain. The Bulls are losing by 10 points to the Grizzlies, and the Clippers are up 68-59 at halftime over the Pacers.
Now, there's obviously been a lot of talk about the success of Australia through this Ashes series and how well we've gone, the players we unearthed, but it's really been a different side of the coin, hasn't it, for England? They've really been found wanting a lot with their batting lineup in particular. They failed to really make any decent scores. The bowling lineup at times, albeit patchy, were effective, but ultimately there were a lot of conditions that probably should have suited their bowling lineup a lot more. So a lot of questions are being asked in the English press at the moment, and looking into why the failures were at the level they were, and looking to what they need to do to improve England and their cricket team in the future.
It has been interesting reading the headlines that are coming out over the UK. And in one paper, they said Zach Crawley and Mark Wood were the only players to enhance their reputations, whereas Joe Root, Haseeb Hameed and Rory Burns were the big series flops. And they also just said, Joe Root is great against ordinary bowlers, but up against top bowlers, he was found out when he came up against the Australian side.
Well, Scott Boland, I think, got him four times. Yeah, I wouldn't be calling him an ordinary bowler.
No, but that's what they said. Joe's great against an ordinary bowler, but then he was found out against our top side, that he wasn't as great as what he should have been. And they're all saying that Chris Silverwood, who is the head selector as well as the coach, all needs to go. So there's calls for management to be looked at, not just the players, that there's calls for changes right across the board. However, most say that Joe Root wants to remain as test captain and is probably the man to continue doing it.
Well, as we discussed yesterday, who's the viable replacement if he used to step down or he used to lose his job as captain? Like, is there anyone there to do it? Ben Stokes, maybe, but he's always got a pretty big workload as it stands already, so.
And the one thing that I took out as well, that Michael Vaughan, who he's been quite vocal throughout this, obviously former Ashes winning captain, and he said, we live in an era where we make too many excuses for too many people, and you can accept it if your team loses to a better side, which in this case, Australia were the better side. But he said, you can't cop it when you just see they've just thrown in the towel, that they actually have just given up. And he said that's what's the real problem with the English side, is that some changes need to happen, but you just cannot be losing in that way.
I think there's even a deeper question. And I know there's a lot of levels to why England may have failed during the series, but a deeper question with cricket in general is just purely how much the white ball cricket is affecting performances at test level. You even look at the English county cricket season, a lot of those pitches are prepared probably more for white ball cricket than red ball cricket. So therefore you're getting spinners absolutely, you know, slog. So I don't think the preparation that in county cricket was what it once was, just probably for the way they're preparing the pitches. And even, you know, like you look at Australia now, yes, we've, you know, been on seam-friendly pitches here through this Ashes series. We've now got to go to dust bowls in the subcontinent, completely different conditions. And we've got a spinner like Mitch Swepson who's going to be bowling a lot over there that we haven't even seen out there in the middle. So a lot happens in, I guess, world cricket, where how are you preparing for test cricket? Because so much focus is often put on the shorter forms in the game and T20 and one-day cricket.
Well, England cricket are capable of resetting themselves, aren't they, Ryan? Because they did that for the World Cup in leading up to 2019. They won the World Cup. 3 or 4 years out, they said, we've got to completely reset our white ball cricket. They did that. They got this really good team progressing through to the World Cup, and obviously that controversial final against New Zealand, but they got the ultimate spoils. Maybe they just need a complete and utter reset again about how they play test cricket and find batsmen that are capable of batting long periods of time. You go through that top six or seven or eight batters they had out here in Australia for this Ashes series. Is there anyone on that team you could confidently say can bat through an entire day's test cricket?
Not at the moment.
Not at the moment. No way.
Well, Joe Root is demanding that county cricket has a complete overhaul off the back of their disastrous campaign.
I think that's spot on. There's been a lot of commentary on that. One play that I did like the look of, Zach Crawley. And I know we saw him in you know, the last couple of tests, and I think there's something there with him that he seems to have a pretty good technique that I think over the years he could not just be a terrific batsman, but maybe a good leader as well for England. And that's the other question. If Joe Root doesn't do it, who's coming through?
Well, he's 23, so he's probably too young to take over at this stage. Yeah,
but it's certainly something to look at down the track. So a lot of questions for England at the moment. Give us an SMS, 0419 767 272. The open line is 13 53 53. Let's take you there now. Good morning, Robbo.
Good morning, team, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you too. It's the 18th. We can still say that, can't we?
Well, we haven't spoken, so we can say it.
Okay, I agree. Good on you, Robbo. Happy New Year to you too. What do you got for us?
Well, I can give you some real good information on the Djokovic affair, and my sources are impeccable. They're probably better than Roger Rashid's, and I'm not joking.
Okay.
Let's have a look at the foreign thing. Last Thursday, Tracy Austin, who is an analyst on the Tennis Channel. Now, the Tennis Channel is a dedicated channel in the US, and all the live feeds you get from around the world come via that channel, into Australia and everywhere. She did a podcast which was produced out of Australia. And I know the person who produced it very, very well. And it praised the Australian public and the government for their stand. And they, you know, and that Tennis Channel, by the way, has 57 million subscribers in the US. So you can see, not now, this time of year in the US, the Australian Open is a very hard sell because they're in the winter months. And more importantly, 90% of the sporting population are interested in the NFL playoffs. They're not interested in tennis. They're only interested in tennis in the States if the US competitor is playing and going well. That's a fact for the US. Now let's move to France. France were watching it very closely because they have a no entry policy, the same as the US currently have. So Djokovic will not be able to go to the US Open unless he gets jabbed. Admittedly, that could change tomorrow. In France, he won't be allowed entry. But more importantly, in France, some major sponsors, and I'm talking major sponsors of the French Open, do not want to be associated with non-vaxxers, and they are currently trying to, they will withdraw their sponsorship of the French Open if he turns up. That is major. Now let's go to the UK. the UK you just hit on, they are currently got three or four problems. Their first problem is they're more interested in the Ashes, and I believe that they're getting out the old stocks out of the Tower of London and lining up 12 of them for the team. But they're worried about the Ashes. They really couldn't care less about the Australian Open unless their Murray goes well. That's about it. They're more worried over there about their electricity bills. I can tell you that for a fact. And Boris Johnson's party than the Australian Open. No politician in any of three of those countries has said anything bad about the Australian or has any bad thoughts about Australia, and that is a fact. So that's a summary. Australia looks good. Don't believe all this garbage about where the laughing stock on the stage. We're not. We've done the right thing according to a lot of people. End of story, guys.
Okay. No, that's a... I feel like I needed a passport listening to that, Robbo. You went around the world there getting everyone's perspectives on things. But no, look, you know, it has been divisive. But I think all in all, Robbo's right. I think by the letter of the law, we got it right as an Australian government that Novak had to be deported in the end.
The process was wrong.
The process was such an issue. It was such a problem.
John McEnroe's interview on US television, I think it was yesterday.
Yeah, I heard some comments about it briefly. Yeah, he ranted about, you know, there's no proof that he'd been out socialising in the public. I did that interview after he'd been COVID, infected with COVID, and someone pointed him in the right direction saying, mate, he admitted it.
He allegedly met with a journalist. It was allegedly, and the interviewer kept saying, he actually himself came out and confirmed he was COVID positive, but it was a weird rant.
Yeah. Good on you, Robbo. Thanks for your call, mate. And thanks to everyone and their input this morning on the open line number and also the SMS. It's the Big Sports Breakfast Summer Edition. Ryan Phelan, Jamie Rogers and Adam Pengelly with you this morning.
Got a story that's caught my interest, Ryan, in the last 24 hours. Christian Eriksen, if you remember correctly, the Danish footballer had that shocking heart attack on the pitch at the Euros last year. Was revived virtually on pitch and was lucky to survive. Obviously had a pacemaker inserted since. He potentially could be on the verge of a comeback at some stage later this year. Be one of the most emotional stories in sport, I'd imagine, in 2022 if it does happen. But his contract was cancelled by Inter Milan recently. He was contracted Inter Milan. There's a rule in the Serie A where you can't play in that competition if you've got a pacemaker fitted. So obviously you can't, if he wants to return and make a comeback to soccer or football, he won't be able to do it in Italy. So he's talking to some English Premier League clubs at the moment. Brentford's one of them, has been mentioned as a potential destination for Christian Eriksen, who's obviously the player who played for Spurs for many, many years. What a story it would be. What a story it would be if he managed to make a comeback and play in the Premier League.
For sure it will. We'll see how that one plays out, and hopefully he'll resurrect his career with a high-profile club in England. That'll certainly get to plenty of column inches as far as the press is concerned. Well, speaking of column inches, this morning we've been talking about the trials yesterday and all of the good horses returning. I know Dave Stanley would be very excited about that as we join him for Racing HQ. Good morning, Dave.
Yeah, morning, Ryan, and morning, Adam, morning, Jamie, and everyone. Yeah, it's great to see these nice horses return. I was really excited yesterday by the two-year-old trials. Off the back of what you guys were talking about with, you know, Coolangatta and Golden Slippers, I sort of posed the same question in Punters post-mortem yesterday to Dean Lester, Chris Roots, and also Brad Davidson, and they were all a bit gun-shy as well. They believe that whilst Coolangatta and Russian Revolution were quite good there up at the Magic Millions. And they, not Russian Revolution, Russian Conquest. The sire was Russian Revolution. That whilst they were good, we probably haven't seen the slipper winner yet. So these trials, I think, yesterday are going to be pretty imperative over the next couple of weeks. And I've got a real soft spot for that Great Barrier Reef, which I mentioned yesterday, which I thought trialled really nicely and behind. So those trials are on the Racing New South Wales website as we speak. And who knows? We could be seeing a slipper winner come out of them.
Yeah, so that market at the moment, your suggestion there, Dave, Great Barrier Reef, $15 at the moment. Coolangatta still holds favouritism at $4 over Russian Conquest at $9, Sajardin at $9, and Shalaten at $11. Metallicity is an interesting one as well, isn't it, for Peter and Paul Snowden, who we were meant to see it step out last Saturday but was scratched.
Yeah, that is, and that's one that Brad Davidson highlighted as well yesterday morning. So we're actually going to chat with Paul Snowden this morning on Racing HQ just after Scratchings. We'll not only talk about the Magic Millions and that 45 minutes of going from shattering in terms of running second to obviously winning there with King of Sparta and the three-year-old Guineas. We'll chat with Richard Callender this morning, Matt Smith, Tracy Bartley. Very interested in chatting with Jamie Richards. Mick Guerin has been joining me on the program, and he's been very keen to pretty much just declare on the Bubbles and the three-year-old Karaka on Saturday, but also in the two-year-old race. There's a lot of aces being held there by Jamie. Wolverine, who is owned by Australian Bloodstock, it is your favourite in that Karaka two-year-old, but we'll chat with Jamie Richards a little bit later in the program. Gerald Ryan and Brad Widdop also joining us because they've got some good chances going around at Newcastle tomorrow, which will be our Wednesday meeting, boys.
Dave, just back on the Golden Slipper, as you were talking about a bit earlier, the old theory about you had to have your two-year-old debut before Christmas to win the Golden Slipper. I think Gay was a massive supporter of that theory. Just doing a quick look, Stay Inside actually debuted on this weekend last year. That was his first race start and went on to win the Golden Slipper. So I know I've been talking about it for a while. I still think there's plenty of water to go under the bridge. If something's going to jump out of the ground in the next couple of weeks, you'd like to think and put his hand up and say, I'm going to be live hope for the Slipper.
Well, I think that actually the race that will have to, that could actually be a key this year is this English Millennium.
Yep.
And I only say that because we've got the Paris Dior, who a couple of Friday nights ago at Canterbury was very, very good. And J-Mac jumped off and sort of said to Peter Snowden on that night, if this horse or if this filly isn't group class, then I'm a bad judge.
Should almost great be barrier. Undefeated, Dave, Paris
yeah,
Dior.
It should be. It just was slowly away, and Glenn got in some trouble in that first start at Warwick Farm. So Great Barrier Reef, another one that's going to be going towards an English Millennium. The horse you just mentioned before of the Snowden camp.
Medalist
City. Sir Jardine's favourite for that race. So that could actually be, it wasn't so much last year, even though we had Profiteer go through that race. But I think this year, just with the timing of it and what we've seen thus far, we could see a slipper horse, or you know, in that particular English Millennium.
Yeah, good on you, Dave. Enjoy Racing HQ today. We'll all be listening in. Plenty to talk about. Thanks for having a chat with us this morning.
Cheers, guys.
Dave Stanley joining us, and Adam, mate, what a debut performance it's been from you the past couple of days. Thoroughly insightful. You've been a pleasure to work with and a great job. And, mate, we have to get you back again soon.
Thanks for having us, Ryan. You and Jamie made it so easy just to slip into the chair for a couple of days, and I'll go back to my usual, 6:50 spot tomorrow morning.
And Phil Moss will be in the chair for the rest of the week.
The next 3 days. Are you essentially on holidays from the paper at the moment?
I am. I've got a few more weeks to go, and then I'll be back at work around the second week in February, and then the footy season will not be too far away in the autumn carnival. So I'll be hit the ground running, hopefully in February and through to March, and then she'll be on for another 9 or 10 months.
Yeah, you excited about the rugby league season? I know that's mainly your brief nowadays with the paper.
Yeah, mostly. Most of my job is writing about rugby league these days, a little bit of racing still too. Yes, I am. I am excited, Ryan. I must admit, you sort of get to around that sort of late August, September, and then by the end of the grand final in October, you're like, oh, can this season just finish, please?
Yeah.
And you do need a break. But once you get sort of end of January, start of February, you start looking forward to it again. So let's hope we can see a couple of teams make some moves up the ladder. I want to see a little bit more change in that ladder. There's a lot of teams dominating the top four, so we'll see how it plays out.
By and large, your synopsis of what the season looks like ahead, that it could be the usual suspects maybe making up the top eight the way things
are. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. We had the top six teams from last year, which were Penrith, Melbourne, Roosters, Manly, South, Parramatta, finishing top six again, potentially. It might be a scrap for those final two spots in the finals again. But I think the competition is just starting to even itself out. Maybe not so much this year, but definitely in 2023. You've seen some guys like Kickowers and Corrissowers and Reed Marnies leaving a lot of those teams that have been traditional top four teams and going to the Bulldogs and the Tigers of the world. So that's what the salary cap's there for, to try and even out the competition. Let's hope we can get a bit more of an even competition in 2022. And we had a lot of lopsided, one-sided games last year.
Well, look forward to you writing about the rugby league season in the Sydney Morning Herald throughout the year. And as you mentioned, you'll be back in your regular spot for the Big Sports Breakfast. But it's been our absolute pleasure having you the last couple
of
days,
Ryan.
Adam.
Thanks, Jamie.
And we'll do it again soon. And thank you again, Jamie. We'll chat again tomorrow. Enjoy the tennis today.
Exactly. Enjoy the tennis today, the NFL, and plenty of basketball on.
Plenty of things happening, and we'll talk about that and much, much more again tomorrow on the Big Sports Breakfast Summer Edition. It's been Jamie Rogers, Adam Pengelly, and Ryan Phelan with you. We'll speak to you again tomorrow.